Welcome, everybody. It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Coach Doug Gefeller in studio this week.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Paul. Well, look, welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is creating a clear path for success in 2015. Why does that sound like something from Star Wars 2015? I'm having a hard time writing it and saying
Me too. That I wrote it the other day for the first time, and I thought, wow, am I getting old? 2015, that was so far in the future.
Yeah, well, the future's here. We are here now. Well, look, I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since, well, this is another date I have to change, 1999, long time. I've been coaching business owners.
You've been partying since it's like 1999. Isn't that the Prince song or something?
I think so. Anyhow, I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com, or the old-fashioned way, you can always call me, 714-726-8354. Well, look, let's get to our show for today. You know, I want to share something with you that has become a ritual for me for way more than 20 years. Every year, I start out the year the same way. And I want to share with you not just my own experiences and tips, but those of a person who spent 20 years of his life researching this topic and wrote a book that's become the Bible for planning. I'm talking about Napoleon Hill. Have you heard of him? Think and Grow Rich? Every year I start out by reading his book, Think and Grow Rich, once again before I start my annual planning. You know, I the only other book I can think of that is anywhere's near the kind of long-term life that Think and Grow Rich has is the Dale Carnegie book, title escapes me, something about talking to people and...
Positives and the Power of Positive Thinking.
The Power of Positive might be it.
Yeah, it's Norman Vincent Peale, right.
Well, look, let me give you a quick background on Napoleon Hill, because it is kind of fascinating. He was born into poverty in 1883. So, 1883, what is that going to do for us today? Well, stick around. He achieved great success as an attorney and a journalist. He was an advisor to Franklin Roosevelt, a confidant of Andrew Carnegie's, and with Carnegie's help, Hill formulated over a 20-year period a philosophy of success drawing on the thoughts and experiences of dozens of rags-to-riches tycoons. Let me just share with you some of the people that he got to know personally that created the basis for his research. Henry Ford, William Wrigley Jr., John Wanamaker, George Eastman, Charles Schwab, Wilbur Wright, William Jennings Bryant, John D. Rockefeller, Thomas Edison, F.W. Woolworth, Clarence Darrow, Woodrow Wilson, William Howard Taft, and Dr. Alexander Graham Bell. Wow, what a list of people. Can you imagine having those people on your, I'm going to say Rolodex and date myself, but let's say having them on speed dial on your mobile phone, that these are people you know well, that know you, that will take your call and will share with you their secrets of how they got to be successful. That's the relationship that Napoleon Hill had with these people. All of these men were extremely successful by any measure you want to use. Some in terms of money, some in terms of inventions, whatever. Hill collected their thoughts and experiences and boiled it down into a formula that still works today. He's also credited with founding the first mastermind group, a concept that continues to draw people today who want to achieve more. You know, for a number of years, 19 years, I put together CEO peer groups all under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. And when I would meet with people and talk to them about joining a forum, I would always talk to them about Napoleon Hill and how he said that the one thing that all of the people had in common that he talked to was they all had someone who helped them. They all had a mastermind group of some type. Well, Hill is long gone, but the trustees of the Napoleon Hill Foundation have collected his many speeches and his writings, and they continue to this day to publish supplemental information to his original book. One of my favorites is titled Napoleon Hill's Keys to Success, The 17 Principles of Personal Achievement. And that's kind of what I want to share with you today as you start off the year with your usual burst of planning, goal setting, and New Year's resolutions. I want to review those key principles that Hill gleaned from the elite list that we went through and then more of successful people and how that still works for you today. Now, we don't have time to go through all 17 of the principles, but I've picked a handful of them that I think speak well to what we're doing today. So, let's get started. Principle, develop definitiveness of purpose. What does that mean, definitiveness of purpose? Well, you can call it vision. You can call it your calling. You can say purpose, but what it boils down to, it's that one thing that is more important to you than anything else. Some of us are lucky enough to know what this is, and some of us have had to search for it. Some of us are still searching for it. But if you do not have a clear objective, a calling, a vision, a purpose, then it's impossible to achieve it. In fact, the reason goal setting fails so often is that the goals are not those that we are really personally and emotionally committed to. They're things that belong on the should list. You know that list, I should do this, I should do that. I'm not going to do any of them, but I know I should do them. You know, the other problem is we set multiple goals. We set lots of goals. And in the process, we miss obtaining the one key goal. I want to be clear here. You can have a lot of sub-goals that help you to achieve your key goal or vision or purpose or calling, whatever it is. But you can't get sidetracked on the sub-goals. You can't let them become more important and pull you away from that one key goal that you want to work on. Recognize them for what they are. They're a means to an end, not the treasure itself. You know, I've heard many stories of people, how people have kept this purpose calling front of mind. Some have taken a photo of what it is, you know, a car, a house, a family that you want, a spouse that you're looking for, children that you hope to have. Whatever it is, they take a photo of it and they put it where they can see it every day. And the goal setting exercises always say, take this photo, put it on the bathroom mirror so that every morning when you get up, you'll look at this and it'll remind you of what you are working for, what you want to achieve, and it'll help you to direct your efforts during the day to keep them more focused towards this one objective. You know, there was a story about a man who he wanted his own office building. He had been renting office space. He didn't like it. He never could get it the way he wanted. He knew what the building was going to look like. He had this vision of a certain brick veneer to his building. And what he did, he kept a brick on his desk that was exactly like the bricks that he wanted to use to build the building. And that brick, every day, he looked at that brick and it reminded him, what am I doing today to earn the money to get that office building, to take that brick and put it with the other bricks that are going to be needed? So, you know, the question is, what is your vision for this year? Can you describe it? Does it create an emotional response when you think about it? Now, you know, these are simple questions, but they are very difficult for some people to answer. We tend to want to rush off into setting plans, setting budgets, setting schedules, making lists of what really amounts to be tasks, not goals, without really having a clear vision that is going to emotionally charge us, keep us, sustain us throughout the year, as things happen that are going to try to sidetrack us, to kind of railroad us away from or put us on the side rails of life where we can't achieve that one goal. So take the time, the most important thing you can do in planning your year is being very clear about where you want to end up this year. Whether it's the business or whether it's your life personally, can you envision where you're going to be? And does that vision touch you in the gut? Does it have an emotional response? That's what's needed. Well, let's touch on another principle of Hill's. And this, I alluded to it when we first started. It was his mastermind or alliance group concept. You know, Hill recognized early on in his interviewing of successful people that none of them had really made it on their own. They all had people that were resources to them, a mastermind group. For some, it was one person. For others, it was a group. Some used the same person or the same group for everything. Others had a different person or a different group for different areas of their life. It may not even be someone who knows more than you, but it's that person that you can trust to hold you accountable, to tell you the truth when you're kidding yourself, to give you that kick or that hand up when you really need it. Whatever way you go to have to be committed to telling the truth, whatever way you go here, whether it's an individual or a group, you must be committed to telling the truth, to sharing everything that's going on, both good and bad, both rewarding and humiliating, with this person or with this group. You know, early in my career, I owned and ran a residential construction company. And during that time, I belonged to a mastermind group. It was called Tech. It has a different name today. But the best advice I ever got was from this group, hands down. You know, there was a time that my company was doing extremely well. The building industry was booming. Every builder was doing well. The banks that I was working with, the investors that were putting money into the projects, they all wanted to see me set a goal to double the size of the company. Boy, they were looking at, let's make twice as much next year, Doug, as we did this year. You know, and it sounded reasonable. It sounded good. So I spent time. I worked up a plan. I talked to my mastermind group. I worked on the details of how I would do this. Would I need new office space? Would I need new people? How would we be organized? What kind of capital was required? What kind of debt could I handle? It boiled down to the fact that I finally had what I thought was a final plan to achieve this growth that both the banks and the investors were supporting. One afternoon, I shared it. I was meeting with my mastermind group, and I shared it with them. And they listened, and I saw a lot of nodding of heads because they had kind of worked with me as I developed this, so they were sucked into it the same way I had been sucked into it. Except for one individual sitting in the back of the room. I'm embarrassed to say, to this day, I cannot remember who it was. But I remember everything else as if it happened 20 minutes ago. He asked me two questions. He said, Doug, your plan sounds good, but you know, you've been in this group for a number of years, and one of the things that you really spend a lot of time talking about is how much you like teaching people. In fact, you shared with us that you would have been a teacher, except you had some money goals that you didn't think you could satisfy by being a teacher. And you really like training your staff and working with them. So I just want to ask you, as you double the size of the company, what is that going to do to your time? How much time are you going to have to teach and to train and to work closely with the staff and to get the satisfaction that you really seem to thrive on of helping young new people in the business learn about it? Second question. You know, you talked about design. And you've shared with us, Doug, that you're somewhat of a frustrated architect. One, you're no architect, but you would have liked to have been an architect. And one of the nice things about having a building company is you get to hire architects. And what's even better, since you're paying them, then you can get to sort of tell them what to do. You get to play with them, and they treat you real nice because you're paying the bills. So you get to participate in the design end of it. He said, how much time in this new company, double the size of your existing company, how much time are you going to get to spend with the architects on the individual projects that you're going to do? talk about a bucket of cold water on my plans. You know, I had not thought of those two questions, and those two questions were really key to me. They had nothing to do with the financial feasibility of growth. They had nothing to do with the market circumstances of whether the market would support the growth. They had nothing to do with whether I could find and hire the staff. They had to do with how did I want to work on a daily basis? What did I want my life to be like when I left home and I showed up at the office? And the results were that, hey, those two things that he mentioned were really important to me, and I wasn't going to get to do those anymore if we doubled our size. As a result, I rethought my plan in light of what I really wanted, not what others wanted, and my decision was not to grow. In fact, it not only was not to grow, but I decided that the company was a little bigger than I wanted it to be, that it could produce everything I wanted out of the company if it was slightly smaller. So I started to downsize. Here I am downsizing in the middle of a boom cycle. People thought I was crazy. Well, I was crazy like a fox for all the wrong reasons. It turned out the economy was in the process of turning around. Builders were stuck with huge inventories of land that they couldn't sell, homes with broken windows that they couldn't rent, lease, or do anything with, subcontractors that were crying for their money, projects that weren't getting finished, and where was I? I had fewer people. I had less debt. I had no inventory of land. I was in a great position to weather this downsize. People were looking at it going, Doug, how did you know that was coming? It's kind of embarrassing to say I had no clue it was coming. I was doing it for a totally different reason. The point of the story is, if I hadn't had a mastermind group, if I hadn't had a group of people that had been with me on the ride up, that knew me, knew my business, knew what was important to me, then they wouldn't have been able to ask me those key questions that made me stop and rethink my plans, that made me rethink them in light of what was really important to me, not what should I do. So get yourself into a mastermind group, whether it's one person or a dozen people. Find people that you respect. Find people that know more than you. Find people that are going to be honest, truthful, give you a kick, give you a hands up, but ask you those tough questions when you need it. Next principle of Napoleon Hill's, he says, control your attention. I had to kind of laugh at that. I haven't seen that on the title of any books in the bookstore. All the books seem to have a title that says something about staying focused. Same thing. Stay focused on your purpose. You know, I had a client who always used the expression, he would say, "Ooh, look, a bright, shiny ball." And this was his expression to point out when the conversation had moved away from the key point that we were talking about to some side topic that was the bright, shiny ball. You know, and it would always kind of bring us back and go, "Oh, yeah, that's interesting, but it isn't what we really want to talk about." You know, I think this is even more of a problem today than it was in Napoleon Hill's time. With email, instant messaging, virtual realities, it's hard to not get pulled away from what we set out to do at the start of the day. You know, Cal Newport in his blog Study Hacks, which I've talked about many times on the show, interestingly enough, advocated this week that we all need to sit down and read a really difficult book slowly. Now, that was sort of his title line. That was the one that caught my attention. I thought, why do I need to read a difficult book slowly? He said, you know, if you do that, let me give you some of the rewards of slow reading of difficult material is going to give you. And he listed four key things. One, he says, it helps you sharpen your ability to work through complicated ideas. Two, it trains your ability to resist distractions. Three, it adds new layers of sophistication to your understanding of others and the world we inhabit. And last, it builds your comfort with ambiguity and respect for disciplined expertise. both useful traits in an increasingly polarized and unjustifiably self-confident culture. What he's saying is focus, focus, focus. You know, in real estate, we used to say location, location, location. I think today, in planning, in managing, we say focus, focus, focus. Nothing gets done if we get distracted. Napoleon Hill stated it a different way. He said, keep your mind on the things you want and off the things you don't want. Pretty simple advice for a guy from that was born 83. Okay, we're back, and we're talking today about creating a clear path for success in 2015. And what we're talking about is listening to some of the research and some of the principles that were created many years ago by Napoleon Hill that I think are still extremely valid today that will really help you to stay focused. We've picked up a couple of them. We've talked about having a clear vision, knowing really where you're going. We've talked about the benefits of having a mastermind group that's going to keep you honest and support you and kick you and pull you up. We've talked about controlling your attention, about staying focused. You know, there's so many distractions out there. I'll just share as a side issue, I do a lot of reading, and sometimes I even try some of the things that I've read and some of the things that I'm advocating for you to do. And a couple of months ago, I read something and thought, well, that sounds pretty valid. I think I'll try it. Well, you know, I'm an early morning person. I work out of my home office, and I sort of like to get up early and immediately, you know, walk down the hall from the bedroom to my home office and fire the computer up and sit down and start working. And I feel really good if it's still dark out and none of the neighbors have turned their lights on yet, because I know I'm ahead of the rest of the world. I may not be smarter, but I'm up earlier. But one of the things that I found I was doing is I wasn't getting a lot done in those early hours, which are the time when I am mentally the sharpest. Not sharp, but the sharpest. And I found as I looked at it and as I read this piece of advice that I was starting the morning going through my emails. Gee, maybe somebody emailed me in the middle of the night. Maybe somebody sent me an email from New York 3 hours ago, where it's already 9 o'clock there and it's only 6 o'clock here. I better read those emails. And you know what happens when you start to read 100 emails in the morning. You know, it isn't the 100 emails, it's the 50 locations and other topics that they drag you into, refer you to, the attachments, the links to other websites. I don't care if it's octalkradio.net, you know. Great site, but do I need to go there first thing in the morning? So I stopped doing my email first thing in the morning. And I shouldn't say I tried to stop doing it completely and I couldn't. So what I do is I scan through to see if there is a email from a sender who is on my list to meet with today. Somebody canceling an appointment or having to reschedule. If I don't see anything there, then I immediately turn the email program off and go on to working on things that require some creative focus, that require working for a period of an hour to 2 hours with no interruptions, because that's the time of day that I can get to do that. So when we talk about focus, I think it's really important for you to identify when's the best time of the day, what for you, when are you the sharpest mentally, and organize your work. Organize it so you do your creative work then. Take the time of day that you start to slack a little bit mentally and fill that with the mechanical tasks that don't take quite as much energy. Well, okay, let's move on to another principle of Hill's. He talks about inspiring teamwork. Now, you know, this one's kind of strange because I don't know a business that I've worked with that there aren't teams within the business working. So it's sort of like, well, why would we talk about teamwork? Everybody understands teamwork. But as I read Hill's definitions, it made me sort of rethink what's going on. Teamwork is not about requiring people to work together for a common goal. Gee whiz. Let me say that again. It's not about requiring people to work together for a common goal, but it's about motivating people to want to work together, to inspire them to cooperate willingly and share what they have with others. That's the difference between teams that work and teams that don't work. It's teams that like to share, that like working with each other, that they enjoy the sharing process. It requires a system to coordinate resources and talents. And an effective team is one that has a culture of honesty and sharing. And it's one that rewards individuals who serve unselfishly. Now, rewards individuals. Let's be clear here. I don't think just because you are part of a team that you can't get an individual reward or be recognized for your individual effort. Because even though we're working as a team, we're not all providing exactly the same input. We're not maybe even all providing the same value. Today, maybe I did more than Paul. Tomorrow, Paul maybe does more than me. So there ought to be a way to recognize that without taking away from the team effort, but to continually to motivate the individuals for their sharing and their contribution with the team. This is the key thing. You cannot create effective teams by drawing an organization chart. You can create effective teams only by working with people and motivating them so that they want to work together, by inspiring them to cooperate with each other, by creating an environment of honesty and sharing rewards recognition for efforts. That's the kind of teams that we need. I think we have very few of those in the business world today, unfortunately. It's very easy for us to look and, like the rest of you, I love reading success stories, and they always start out with two guys working in a garage. These guys now happen to own 100-foot yachts and basketball teams and whatever. But, you go, gee whiz, what did they have going for them? Well, when you start out with nothing and you haven't really got the ability to fail because you've got so little in the way of resources, you must succeed, then you work together. You pull together. The vision is very clear as to what the team needs to accomplish. The problem is later on, as companies get successful and we add more people and we add more layers of bureaucracy, we add more impediments to communication, and we cloud the goals of what we're trying to achieve to the point where people are showing up with the idea that achievement is getting here at 8 and leaving at 5. That is not what we're looking for. That is not what we're looking for at all. So, I've often worked with clients and shared with them the idea that it's my belief that you would achieve greater productivity this year and greater efficiency and greater profits by working with the people you have to make them more effective rather than looking at adding new people. So many times we think adding more people is the solution. Who out there is working at 100% capacity? Well, sure, I am, for about 30 minutes of any 8-hour day. What gets me working at 100% capacity for 4 hours out of the day? Well, being part of a team. Let's move on. This one, of course, is where most of our planning really starts. Hill talks about cultivating a creative vision. Let me use a word that we don't use much in business, and it's imagination. Imagination is and always has been the key to great achievements. It's where old ideas and established facts may be assembled into new combinations and put to new uses. But imagination requires an environment that encourages thinking, allows mistakes, provides time for study and planning, and it thrives in an environment that is supportive, not judgmental. You know, one of the interesting things for me is living in Southern California and having seen Disneyland from the early days when it first started to the huge business success that it is today worldwide. And, of course, having the usual fascination with what Roy Disney, Walt Disney, created. You know, the imagination. You know, they had a TV program, Imagineering, I think was what it was called. And I've read some books on it, and that talks about their sort of think tanks where people dream up these things that have never been done before, and wild tales that entertain us that you go, how did they think of that, you know? Who would have thought of it? But, you know, that's not typical for us in business. We are so buttoned down and serious about our work that we don't take the time to use our imagination. It's sort of like you want to sit there and daydream and imagine what things could be like. Hey, look at that stack of paper on your desk. When you get done with that, then you talk to me about telling me what things could be like. And of course, we know that's never going to happen because that stack of paper on your desk is self-perpetuating. It continues to grow. So you really need to work to create an environment that is going to encourage people to be imaginative. We read too many rare examples of it. You know, the polio vaccine that was an accident that came from a study that went wrong out of mold. We read of the sticky notes that were an accident out of an experiment of how to create a glue that didn't really work, and somebody created sticky notes and never dreamed that they would have a commercial application. They were a fun thing that they did on the side. Speaking of fun things, why is it that so many of the really successful people look at their work as fun? That what they are doing to them is strictly play. Whether it's restoring cars, whether it's testing planes, whether it's producing radio shows, they're having a ball, you know? And yet, the more people we get in a business, the more serious we get about growing the business, the more we take the imagination, the creative ability, the ability to cultivate a creative vision of where we're going to go. This is the time of year that I tell people that, you know, I want to know what you are going to do different this year. And they look at me and go, last year was a pretty good year. And I go, have you never heard John Wooden's famous saying, you know, if you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep getting what you've been getting. And nobody wants to keep getting what they've been getting. We all want to get more. The other one is the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and expect different results. So all of those tie into this idea of vision. Well, a couple more to share with you, and then we'll wrap it up for the day. Budget principle of Hill's was budget your time and money. You know, time and money are finite resources, and they need to be managed on a daily basis. Nobody's going to argue with me about that. To use your time wisely, you must know what your objective is, and you have determined what you're willing to invest to achieve it in terms of both time and money. Would you even dream of using a checkbook without knowing what the balance is in the checkbook? You know, I mean, this is a joke we've all heard about the person, and we pick on women usually when we tell this joke. It's not fair. But we talk about the woman that felt like she could keep writing checks because there were more checks in the book, but there was no money. Well, you know, the same thing goes for our time. why are we spending our day without looking at the fact that there's a finite balance? You only have so many hours today. How are you going to spend them? Do you think about that in the morning when you get up? Do you think about what am I going to do with those hours? Do you think about how many hours am I going to devote to these individual tasks? You know, there's projects that I could work on for 3 weeks. The same project is perfectly, you know, it's good and meets the client's needs if I worked on it for 5 hours. So I have to decide ahead of time, what am I willing to invest in this project in terms of my time, in terms of the client's money and time, and then work on it. You need to first determine daily how you're going to use your time and what's available for each one of the tasks that you've got to work on. Well, I've saved the best for last. I got a kick out of this one. It was labeled very easily. It was a principle called go the extra mile. Well, we've all heard that. Go the extra mile. Give more customer service. Well, Hill created a unique formula for measuring this effort. Here's what the formula is. It is Q to the first power plus Q to the second power plus MA equals C. And what that means for him is the quality of the service rendered plus the quantity of the service rendered plus the mental attitude in which it is rendered equals your compensation in the world and the amount of space you'll occupy in the hearts of your fellow man. Notice the addition of the term mental attitude here. It isn't just about what you did, the quantity and quality. It's about the attitude that you exuded, the attitude that you projected as you did it. In fact, Hill allocates almost all of his remaining principles. Remember, I said there were 17 here, and we've only covered a handful. But he allocates almost all of his remaining principles to personal characteristics that impact mental attitude. They all boil down to going about your life work cheerfully, caring more about others than you do about yourself. So when you think about your plan for yourself or for your company or for your business or your division this year, are you thinking about the mental attitude that you're going to create? We might substitute the word culture, but that's a scary word. People really stumble over the word culture these days, trying to define what it is and what it means. And usually when they talk about culture, it's the should list. They describe the culture that we'd like to have, not the culture that we do have. So think about mental attitude. Think about the planning, the work that you're going to do this year, and think about how are you going to do it in a way that you can maintain a positive mental attitude, that you can be cheerful, that you can provide the quantity and the quality of the service with a mental attitude that's going to just blow people's minds. Well, that's all I have time to share with you today in terms of planning, and that's really going to sort of wrap up. We ended last year with a number of talks on strategic planning and goal setting, and this is my last one on it. We might come back mid-year and talk about how you're doing on it and sort of as a follow-up. But, you know, I think I'm going to sum it up and say take the time to think about a vision that creates an emotional reaction that you really want. Children are great at this, you know? They know exactly what they want, and they know exactly how they're going to feel if they get it. We have to work at it a little harder. So to wrap up our conversation today, my key point here is, what are you going to do as a result of this discussion? You're going to read the books that we talked about? You're going to listen to the podcast again? You're going to change the time of day that you do your email? You're going to lock yourself in a room and think creatively? Or are you going to create a mastermind group that's going to help you? Well, thank you very much. If you're listening to our podcast, thank you for visiting our website. While you're there, be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests from the past. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. If you missed any of the previous shows, you can pick them up on dgefeller, D-G-F-E-L-L-E-R, .podbean.com, or go to our webpage on the Coaching Perspective website. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. Hope that you enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.